Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we begin a series of conversations with the candidates seeking the office of Tulsa Mayor. With the nonpartisan primary coming up on August 25th, the vote will either elect our next mayor, if a single candidate gets over 50% of the vote, or winnow the field down to two candidates who will then appear on the November ballot. Today we begin with Greg Robinson. Robinson is a native Tulsan, graduate of Booker T. Washington High School, who was a community organizer for Barack Obama's 2012 re-election campaign and on the 2016 Hillary Clinton presidential campaign. Returning to Tulsa, he joined MetCares Foundation as a founding staff member, serving as the director of family and community engagement. And as a part of MetCare, he helped launch the organization's first school, the Greenwood Leadership Academy, an elementary school in partnership with Tulsa Public Schools. This is Mr. Robinson's first candidacy for elective office. You can learn more about his platform at gregfortulsa.com. And he's my guest today on Studio Tulsa. Greg Robinson, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Rich. I appreciate it.
First of all, why are you running for mayor? What made you decide to run?
Well, I'm running because I believe that every Tulsan, regardless of their race, their socioeconomic status, and frankly, their zip code, deserves a pathway to upward mobility. And as somebody who grew up right here in Tulsa off the corner of 29th and North Lewis, I have experienced Tulsa in all of its grandeur and opportunity, but also in the fact that not everyone has an equal opportunity at those chances to move up. And so I think in the moment that we're in right now, not just in the city of Tulsa, but across the country, we need a leader that is willing to deal with the issues at hand and be a frank dealer with the citizens of Tulsa. And that's something that I've proven capable of doing throughout my career and something that I want to do as mayor of Tulsa. So here I am asking Tulsans to support me as the next mayor.
So let me follow up on that. How do you ensure that everyone does have that equal opportunity as mayor? There's a lot of factors that go into that equal opportunity. What can you do as mayor to ensure that people have equal opportunity?
Yeah, we want to focus on an inclusive economic growth approach. We want to take a more holistic approach to public safety by investing deeply in mental health resources and in public health resources. We want to be more innovative than we've been in terms of providing access to transportation and then closing the housing access gaps and the educational equity gaps. And finally, we must protect the safety and prosperity of Tulsans, regardless of any political motives that may exist. I think if we do those four things, what we will do is create an ecosystem and an environment where, regardless of what part of town you're in, whether you're a hardworking laborer from West Tulsa or a newcomer to Tulsa in the East or sort of a longtime resident in Midtown, you'll be able to take advantage of the increasing opportunities that we're going to provide in the city.
Well, that's those are big orders that you're talking about. Before we talk about some of those issues, obviously the pandemic is going to be the most important issue the next mayor is going to confront first and center. But leaving that aside for a moment, what to you is the most important issue that you would confront and really try to solve as mayor?
That's economic opportunity for me. When you think about the way that our city is built and how our city gets its funding, we get 100% of our funding essentially from sales tax dollars. And right now, we essentially build our city along golden corridors. And so if you're not in Midtown, if you're not in some of the affluent areas of South Tulsa, you really have to travel a great distance to get to needed amenities. And the COVID-19 pandemic has really accentuated this issue. And so the root of my economic proposal is to create economic prosperity in West Tulsa, in East Tulsa, and in North Tulsa, and to do that by investing more in communal wealth development, meaning investing in community development corporations and community land trusts, so that money that is spent in those areas is not just benefiting the city as a whole, but it is put back into the hands of stakeholders within those communities to develop the area around them the way that they see fit. That's going to allow Tulsa, the metropolitan city, to be more competitive and to capture more of those tax dollars away from some of our suburban cities. That's critical to being able to continue to provide the sorts of amenities and resources that Tulsans need and desire. But it is also critical creating opportunities for different sorts of Tulsans from different socioeconomic backgrounds and racial demographic backgrounds that have been left out of the economic equation for far too long. And so the number one priority for me is ensuring that we have more access to quality jobs, more opportunities for communities themselves to have a hand in their development, because that ultimately will create more of an economic boom and, frankly, make Tulsa a more desirable place for those deciding where they want to raise their family.
Give us a sense of how these community development organizations would work and how they would develop an area of Tulsa. Can you give us an example?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you look at the way we have the ability to create tax incremental financing districts, what we can do as a city is partner with community development corporations that are run by community stakeholders, and we can commit to invest a certain portion of funds. We can then partner with private entities to invest portions of funds, and then we're able to solicit funds from federal dollars that are only available to these sorts of community development organizations. And so actually what this does is it gives us another stream of revenue to try and bring in that you can't get access to unless you have community development organizations in the center and at the core of any sort of development you're trying to do in a particular area. So the advantages are really twofold. You're able to go to, say, if you were in Kendall Whittier, for instance, and have a community development organization in that area, they're able to leverage not just city funds or funds that are coming in from potential investors, but they're also able to partner with the city to get federal dollars to come in as well. And so it creates not just a sense of ownership within that area, but it also gives us more access to development dollars.
So you're looking at the community stakeholders creating a community organization that can take, say, tax increment district, where you're taking the tax dollars from that area, directly put it to use in that area. You're going to try to attract federal dollars along with that, and then hopefully some private investment as well.
Absolutely. When you look at where we're positioned in the city of Tulsa, there is, with the expansion and deep investment in downtown, there's great opportunity with obviously the downtown adjacent neighborhoods to attract in investors. They are already wanting to come. And so this is simply extending out that sort of investment further to the west across the river, to the north across Highway 244, and then to the east as well. And it's critical because there are plenty of Tulsans in these areas that are potential business owners, are certainly important to the tax infrastructure that we have. But when you go into those areas, it's very clear that they're either suffering from being food deserts, or they're suffering from a lack of economic investment, or they're suffering from a lack of really accessible and differentiated housing infrastructure. And these are all things that creating, you know, not just community development corporations, but community land trusts allow us to put money into these areas specifically for the development of those areas. And then that makes the conversations with private investors that are looking to come in to Tulsa and to support growth, it makes that conversation much more enticing, because you have a infrastructure set up to really create inclusive growth with a core constituency that's going to be deeply invested in the success of that area. So at the end of the day, we have to be able to build out the corners of our city, right? We have to be able to build out areas of economic cohesion and communal security in each part of the city in order to alleviate some of the crime issues that we have, in order to improve the educational opportunities here in the city of Tulsa. Those are the things ultimately that businesses, corporations are looking at when they're determining where they want to bring their infrastructure. And so, again, it is necessary to do this to maintain and even increase our competitiveness in the region.
You mentioned two areas, affordable housing, the mixed and affordable housing, and food deserts, which, you know, these are issues we've been working on in Tulsa. It's issues a lot of cities have been working on, and it's found to be, it's a very difficult problem to solve. And of course, we've been working on it here in the city. What has been missing from that effort to alleviate some of the food deserts, to really build up a stock of affordable housing? I mean, affordable housing is a nationwide problem.
Well, I think we think about affordable housing wrong. I don't think it's necessarily about affordable housing as much as it's about affordable and accessible housing. And so what I mean by that is, if you just have areas where you're trying to create affordable housing stock, you still create areas of concentrated poverty, which does not help the situation. Instead, what we want to do is create a variety of housing stock in each area of the city. What that does is it brings different sorts of people with different economic backgrounds into the area, creating the sort of economic diversity that you need to have a viable environment for businesses to feel comfortable coming into. And so that's why the communal development component of this is so critical, because if you build everything like a suburban neighborhood, well, not everybody wants to live in those sorts of areas, right? Some Tulsans want to live in very walkable, urban, dense type of neighborhoods. Some Tulsans want to live sort of intergenerationally, where there's the ability to have senior living homes and group homes and homes for young emerging families, but also established families. So when we talk about needing to be innovative in housing, that's what we're talking about. Not certainly using the affordable tax credits, but thinking in a more futuristic way about how do we tackle the homelessness problem while we're creating middle-class homes and creating low-income, affordable housing options as well. And when you start thinking like that, you start to think about how do we utilize what we're looking at right now as blighted homes, or what we're looking at right now as empty shopping centers, and reimagine those places as different sorts of housing stock. So the conversation that we've began to push with the city officials and with the director of housing, Becky Glico, I think is doing an amazing job, is not just about affordable housing, it's about accessible styles of housing. And you're right, this is a conversation that is happening across the country, and that's why I'm excited to be in leadership, because I've had the ability through my work with MedCares Foundation to work on how to combat the housing crises, how to combat the negative effects of gentrifying areas as you're trying to develop areas. These are things that I'm not just talking about. These are things that I've worked with community members on, worked with policy experts across the country on, and frankly, have worked within the city of Tulsa even on their affordable housing strategy, and will continue to do that with a strong team as mayor.
My guest today is Greg Robinson. He's the director of community and family organizing at the MedCares Foundation, and he's running for mayor as we begin our series of conversations with the Tulsa mayoral candidates. He's my guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, whoever the next mayor is, the immediate priority will be the immediate response to the COVID-19 pandemic. What are your views towards protecting citizens' health and also our economic well-being at this particular time?
Yeah, this is the number one issue for me, and I must say that it has tested the very core of who we are as a city, but I think that's when you see the kind of city that Tulsa is. And so I have been extremely proud of the citizens of Tulsa and their push and advocacy, even on city leadership, to be responsible and to lead us through this pandemic. I think for me, it is first about taking immediate action to slow the spread of communal spread of COVID-19 here and putting in common sense policies. I've been a critic of how slow Mayor Bynum has been to put in common sense policies that are best practices that will slow the spread of COVID-19. I think he started off strong, but then got caught up in a political game, which obviously was most notable in the poor decision to allow Donald Trump to hold a rally here. But after we act immediately by addressing the housing crisis, for instance, the eviction crisis, to ensure that we're getting potentially evicted Tulsans access to mediation, access to legal support, and then rental assistance, after we address the fact that we've got to make sure that every child in the city of Tulsa has access to Wi-Fi and an educational device, after we address the fact that we've got to ensure that our families can feed themselves and have access to remote working opportunities, if that is the case, then we begin to assess how we continue to maneuver ourselves through the pandemic. And that, for me, is a collaborative effort. This is not just a health crisis. It's not just an economic crisis. It is a housing crisis, as I have mentioned at length, and it is an educational crisis. And so we have to have collaboration of stakeholders from every different perspective, those who are very financially well off and sort of are in leadership, and those who we often forget about at the table, so that we can collaboratively make decisions that we know are going to impact those separate sectors, and so we can more effectively advocate for CARES Act dollars and additional federal dollars to come into our city and support our citizens. And then finally, we have to be adaptive and understand that our world, our city, is not going to be the same coming out of the pandemic as it was before COVID-19. And that actually provides us opportunities to be stronger than we've been in the past. We can invest in more green energy, more green infrastructure, and bringing those sorts of jobs, including technology jobs, to the city. This diversifies our economy, brings a lot more sort of middle class jobs into the city. Again, we talked at length about my push to sort of localize our economic perspective and diversify it by creating these sort of community wealth development opportunities. And then lastly, I think it's about passing very common sense policies that are going to address the inequities that have been so exposed by COVID-19. I think State Question 802 was a good example of that. I think State Question 805, dealing with the criminal justice system, is another great example of that. I think working with city council to see what we can do intentionally about the inequities that have come up in the equality indicators is another great example of how we can use the lessons of the pandemic to create a more equitable city. And ultimately, as city decision makers, our responsibility to do that is through policy.
Well, let me ask you another question personally about yourself. What are the most important attributes you possess that would be an asset to the citizens and important to heading up city government as mayor?
Well, I think if you look at my background and understand that I come from an activist and an accountant. My father was an activist here who was a civil servant, built homes for low-income families. My mother was a senior accountant at the Williams Companies until she was forced to retire due to multiple sclerosis. I am someone who is Tulsa-born and bred and has very little political ambition, much more ambition to ensure that my growing family has the access and pathway to opportunity like everyone else. And ultimately, my pledge to the citizens of Tulsa is that I'm going to make decisions that are going to protect our safety and put all of our families in the best positions to be prosperous, regardless of the political cost of that. I'm not someone who's looking even to run for a second term. I am quite frankly looking to get us on the right track. And so if you look at my record, you will see that I have spent the time in the schools as an educator. I founded an elementary school with in partnership with Tulsa Public Schools. I spent my professional career as an organizer in low-income communities, including the ones in Tulsa, teaching citizens how to address critical issues at the city level. I have been in the streets with people who don't know where their next meal is coming from, don't know if that paycheck is going to arrive on time. And that is the people-centered perspective that I bring. And so I think my combination of experience working in City Hall, but also working from and for the citizens of Tulsa is a much needed perspective. And at the end of the day, I have the will to take bold action and not just, you know, admire our issues in the city, but put policies in place that are going to solve those issues. And I think that's what we need in leadership right now.
I'm going to ask another question on public safety. And in general, how can you as mayor work to improve relations between police and certain areas of the community where they are mistrusted? And an additional question is, you know, we've come up with the idea of a citizen oversight program for the police. Are you for it in its current proposal? And if so, how would you overcome resistance from police unions and others that don't want that oversight? What are your feeling on the whole issue of the relations between the police department and the community?
Yeah, this is something that I've already been working on and will work on it regardless of whether I'm fortunate enough to be elected mayor or not, because it is something that really strikes at the humanity and the livelihood of so many Tulsans. I think we have to do a much better job of putting our public servants in position to be successful. Right now, we're spending $122 million on the police department. None of that money is going to mental health resources or a public health infrastructure. And so because of that, we are asking police officers to be mental health professionals, to be social workers, to be immigration officials, and they cannot effectively do their jobs. The other strain that that's creating is it is creating a us versus them mentality in many of the communities that have been already oppressed for so long and now feel as if they're being attacked as opposed to supported or protected. So when you look at the City Voice data that says that less than a third of the African-American community has any sort of belief that the police are there to protect them, that speaks at the core of our issues. And the reason that myself and other community members have been so fervent about the need for not just improved use of force policies or improved community policing strategies, but a process that includes community in that, because you cannot build trust if you don't have all sides coming to the table. And so the reason that I am the most equipped to handle where we are is because I am the one who has been in the trenches of this situation. I was deeply disappointed in Mayor Bynum's failure, frankly, to create a open national search for a police chief, not because I don't believe in Chief Franklin or any other Tulsa police officer, but because I knew that without a open and national search, it would not do anything to create more trust between community and the leadership of the department. It's why I'm dumbfounded at the fact that Chief Franklin has come out and said that there doesn't need to be community involvement in a use of force policy. That doesn't make sense. A police may be the expert in being an officer and using force, but they are not the experts in having that force used against them and how that feels, in being policed and how that feels. So we have to be more united, and to do that, we have to actually come to the table together. Again, it's why I'm so disappointed in Mayor Bynum's lack of leadership, specifically on the Office of the Independent Monitor issue. This is something that Mayor Bynum proposed and had great support for from community members, from city council members, because he was using a model in Denver that has been proven to work. Yet, the minute that he was confronted by the Fraternal Order of Police, he sold the citizens of Tulsa out and backed down. I'm not speaking of this just from headlines. I'm speaking to this from experience. I was one of the leaders of the community protest. I was also one of the community leaders that negotiated, we fought successfully with Mayor Bynum to reinstitute the Office of the Independent Monitor as a proposal. And yet, when we had the opportunity to meet about how we were going to do that, Mayor Bynum, instead of showing up and meeting with community members as he had agreed to, he showed up with the Fraternal Order of Police in that meeting. Mm. Now, that is the sort of action that does not show good faith. And it's the sort of flip-flopping and saying one thing and doing another that has characterized Mayor Bynum's tenure. He says a lot of the right things, but when it comes down to doing the things, he has failed to do them, and I believe that it is because he's too politically motivated to be the sort of leader that we need right now.
We're about out of time, so let me finish by just saying, hey, when it comes to voting day, why should they vote for Greg Robinson as the next Tulsa mayor?
I ask for the citizens of Tulsa's vote because I'm going to be a leader that you may not agree with everywhere that I stand, but you're certainly going to know where I stand, and you're always going to have access to the city of Tulsa to share your opinions, share your vision, and work with us to create a better Tulsa. We can create a city where everyone, regardless of their race, socioeconomic status, or zip code, has a pathway to upward mobility. Please check out my website, gregfortulsa.com, my vision and my plans, and vote on August the 25th. I appreciate your time, Rich.
Greg, thanks very much for joining us.
Absolutely.
Greg Robinson is the Director of Family and Community Engagement at the Met Cares Foundation. He's our guest today on Studio Tulsa as we begin a series of conversations with the candidates seeking the post of Tulsa mayor. Of course, the primary day is coming up on August 25th. We'll continue to have mayoral candidates joining us next week on Studio Tulsa as well. For more information on Greg Robinson's campaign, visit gregfortulsa.com. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.